Three.
We had a wife.
Two.
Yeah, I needed to go to that. Yeah, no start recordings.
Cool. All right, episode 8, Salvage, opens with the Mormon scene, which is... I kind of like the little glimpses we get into the Mormons.
I like that Mormon. I think that Mormon
is a nice person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's not an asshole about... He's not trying to preach or convert, and he's not an asshole about Miller being, you know, not on board, and they have a nice little conversation.
Yeah, I kind of...
When Miller sort of teasingly says, aren't you scared? Like, you know, the Naboo could go out and find
nothing, aren't you scared?
And he goes, yeah, of course I am.
Yeah, I would be scared shitless, aren't you? And yeah, of course I am.
But the nice little bit about that's just God telling me we haven't finished looking yet. And I was like, that's how faith should be. That's nice.
That's a great, yeah. I mean, I'm assuming that if the Naboo is, like, ready to go on a 100-year voyage, it's kind of self-sufficient, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it must be to some extent.
To some extent, I mean, they're gonna.
You haven't seen the Naboo, really, have you? Yet, not from the inside, so you don't really know how it's set up.
No, we see a glimpse of it on the Tycho station.
Yeah, you see the big herald.
Yeah.
Is it okay for me
to describe? It's not like a spoiler. It's just what what it's like.
Go for it. Yeah,
it's a big cylinder. and the outside, or the inside of the outside, is where they live, on the inside of this big cylinder. And when you see it, it's all divided up into like farmland and little villages, and so it's like a slice of countryside.
It's like the opposite of a planet. It's in the outside instead of the. It's on the inside of the outside. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, so it's like they would have, you know, an ecosystem. I would imagine
Looks pretty cool. The Herald itself, so the big gold thing, I think, mm-hmm. I don't know, I can't remember whereabouts in the episode it was, so there's no point in me picking it out, but...
I can't remember exactly.
But with the Herald, is the Herald just, like, the thing that ships have on the front?
Or the figurehead.
Figurehead. The usually it's like a mermaid or some...
I think that's certainly part of it, but the Naboo is... It's a spaceship, but it's also a cathedral in the Mormon's eyes. So it's got the, you know, the decorations, the cathedral.
But is there a function to it, or is that?
No.
I don't think so.
No,
no.
Okay.
No, the big horn would be sensors or something.
or whether or not it's big enough for people live inside it or something.
Or like ship's horn.
With the space stuff, size... much less of an issue, as is shape.
I was just going to say, it's not so much size as shape. Yeah, it doesn't matter what shape it is. It doesn't have to be aerodynamic or anything.
So your ornament could be, you know...
whatever you want.
900% the size of your ship, really.
Yeah, really extravagant.
Well, it's a bit of a waste of... You still need the mass to work out in terms of...
Hollow, you can make it out of...
yeah, it's still going to be heavy, though. Or massive, rather. It's still going to be massive.
Yeah, paper mache. Maybe that's the way.
Yeah.
Again, though, something that size is still quite a lot of extra mass on your ship.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. No, I feel like I'm always bursting Chris's bubbles when these discussions. I'm like, sorry to interfere with reality.
I mean, when you've got unlimited, you know, if you've essentially got unlimited energy, you know, more mass just means.
Is that going to affect the deceleration as well?
Yes.
Does it mean you have to spend more time?
More energy to speed it up, and more energy because it's the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Mormon guys seem kind of nice. I think that it's going to really suck when Fred Johnson steals the Naboo.
Oh, that's your thinking. I was going to say, didn't they already do something with it? But was that where he throws everybody off so he can pinch their sensors for a while, isn't it? To watch the battle.
Pretty sure he's going to joyride it. Yeah.
Joyride.
I saw there was a.
It's a big thing to joyride.
I saw a video on it was one of the like YouTube shorts or something like that, where someone put their car in for an MOT and they left the dash cam on, or the dash cam light stays on, or something, or the dash cam light automatically turns on whenever they drive, and they caught the mechanic driving it up and down the lane like really.
Oh, God.
Oh, it's like.
I mean, I think that's a perk of the job. Like
they wouldn't have known otherwise. Like, exactly.
It's still wear and tear on your vehicle.
I'm probably setting myself up for prosecution here, but for a spell, I was my job was painting murals in rich people's houses, often just underwater scenes in the bathroom because they're not very imaginative, like dolphins and light shafts coming through the city and stuff. And there's one it was a new build. It was a fancy bathroom. It had the fanciest shower I'd ever seen in my life. And I was like, I've got to give that a go. So I had a shower in their shower.
Oh, yes.
It's one with like jets from every direction. Oh, yeah. And it had like a seat in it. You could sit down in it and it would still be squirting you from every direction. It was amazing.
You know, my problem with that would be getting dried. They would know, surely, because you've used a towel.
Oh, when I have a shower, normally I don't dry. I just get dressed. Oh, I don't see the point.
I'm far too hairy for that.
You just dry off naturally. Yeah. Like, what's the point of toweling yourself down?
Also, I'd be worried about being caught naked in their house. But
I put my clothes on. I just don't dry because the clothes.
No. I know you put them back on. I just meant while you were showering. Like, somebody comes in and you're like naked, wandering around naked, getting ready for the shower. Just come out.
Drew, the thing, right? Like, for a period of time, you didn't have heating on. Hot water. Does that just putting on the clothes after you've had a shower in cold water in the winter?
Well, then you're like the problem with that is when you're naked with the cold water on you, right? Toweling off is extra time being cold. Like getting dressed, you get warmer quicker.
Isn't it harder to get your clothes on though if you're a bit damp? I find that
A little bit, but I wear very loose clothes anyway. So there's a few things like that I mean, my other one that people know is this was literally when you first use a toilet when you're a child.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I put the toilet seat down, sat on the toilet, and went, the toilet seat is pointless, and lifted it back up and just sat on the toilet for my entire life.
You told me about this before.
I don't use toilet seats, and I believe everybody else is fucking stupid, because it's just another thing that's the same shape as the toilet that you fold down and sit on. What the fuck for?
They're a bit more comfy than the rim of the... Porcelain,
I don't go on a toilet to chill out.
Well, no, but I mean, it's you want to be as relaxed as possible at that moment.
I'm on there for like 20 seconds.
You've got better cuts than me then.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate like a wooden toilet seat. I mean, the thing is,
wooden toilet seats are nice.
Yeah, but also the lid is important to me, and I bet you don't give a shit about the lid.
No.
Well, it is for me because the dog drinks at the toilet if I don't put it down.
That's okay, though, isn't it?
Not really. I mean, so long as bleach and stuff in there sometimes.
Oh, okay, right.
And he just still does it, and you're like, why are you doing it? Surely you must smell that this has got chemicals in it.
That's maybe why he's going for it. Maybe it's like, I can get high off this. So, like, I put the lid down whenever I flush the toilet because I don't want toilet splashes.
It doesn't splash when it flushes.
It does
a bit.
Does.
Oh, you need a better toilet.
See, this is the thing. I think Drew's got the perfect toilet and all this stuff.
No, mine's a terrible toilet, but it doesn't splash when it flushes.
You don't feel it. It can splash up to 6 feet. Like, no, I don't get why people keep their toothbrushes in their shitting room.
That's also washing in the same room where you shit is weird to me.
Yeah. Like in the old council houses, they used to have a toilet room and then they used to have a washing room.
Yeah.
Makes perfect sense to me.
No, I agree with that. And also then you're not held up by somebody doing bathroom things that aren't to do with shitting. You're not held up with them by them when you need shit, you know?
Yeah. And also,
like other things you can put off, but you can't put a shit off at certain times, you know?
Well, it's rude to ask people to, that's for sure. It's not good. It can't be good for you to hold stuff in, really, is it?
In the comments, I'd like people to try not using the toilet seat and not drying yourself after a shower. Mm. See what you think.
Drew challenge.
That's two episodes in a row where we've had shit mentions.
I know, yeah.
It's going to drive people off, I think, eventually. Yeah, well. People can only take so much.
Not mainland Europeans, though. They love shit.
Do they? Oh, okay.
Like, all their humour is based around shitting.
Excuse me. Right, okay. Right, well, anyway.
So that's enough talk about the Mormons. Right, Right, so I mean, there's so much in this episode.
It's interesting. Can I say one more thing about this scene? It's interesting that he says to Miller, first time in space. And that's quite weird when we think about it, because we think of anything outside the Earth as being space. Even being on Mars or the Moon, or what we think of that as that's out in space. And it's interesting that, yeah, it does make sense that the way he says it, because obviously if you lived on this, as he said, he's born and raised, or even if you live on Luna or the Mars, you're not in space anymore, are you? So it's quite it's quite an interesting point of view. And that's what I love about this show, is those little details that make it make you go, oh yeah, so, this is a real, you know, this is.
So when you say in space, if they're taking a trip from Earth to the Moon, do they think of that as in space, or do Earth people think?
Yeah, the actual travelling, the travelling part is in space. Because that's what's happening here. He's travelling from Ceres to Eros.
Like Hamish's point is, Miller, we'd think of him as living in space.
Whereas
he doesn't.
He doesn't think of that. Also, he lives in an asteroid.
In connection with that, we get a little agoraphobia mention, so a bit of representation for me and Hamish. Appreciate that.
Sorry, I'm just readjusting me drinks. Okay, great. There's a lot of convergence here, isn't there? I do have a question. I don't know if I should jump around with my questions initially.
Go for what you think.
How Miller knows, or how Miller works out, that Lionel Polansky and Julie Mao are the same person.
I don't think he does. No, he doesn't. Just then.
Yeah, no, he learns from Semi that the person who piloted the Anubis shuttle went to the Blue Falcon?
He
thinks that Julie Mao was in the shuttle, and that the shuttle person went to that location. And then actually he sees her, doesn't he? He actually sees Julie Mao on the little screen. So at this point, Miller's never heard the name Lionel Polansky, and the other characters haven't heard of Julie Mao, because they've not heard of Julie Mao in connection with these things. So those two things come.
We find out that Lionel Polansky is just a code name that the OPA use.
Was it Julie Mao particularly, or is it?
Yeah. No. Yeah. I mean, it was Julie Mao in this case, but it's not. It's a general name they use, apparently. Not discovered that yet. Sorry, you might be right. We might not find that out until later.
I didn't know that was the name. I've never noticed that.
I don't. So
it might be. It might be in the finale or something then.
Okay. All right. All right, should we kick off on some of the Millery stuff then? Right. Oh my god, they spend a lot of time in the ship.
We'll get to that in a minute. But I forgot about another huge thing that happens. It's a very short scene, but it's a huge thing, and I'd forgotten about it until then.
Oh, let's talk about that. What's that?
Okay, yeah, what's that?
No, I was just going to say it's the Avasarala's friend killing himself.
Yeah,
and you see her reaction there. I mean, she holds it together really well, but that's a lot of emotion from Avasarala in that scene. Her face, and you can see her face almost sort of squirming and realizing it was her fault, and
Did they say suicide? Was that one of the things they said?
Took his own life. Yeah,
took his own life. Because one of my notes here is, who killed de Graaff?
De Graaff killed de Graaff. I suppose you could almost say Avasarala killed de Graaff by taking his dreams away or whatever.
Very quick sidebar with Hamish.
Oh? Where am I going to get this?
Discord.
Right, that's going to mess up the video, and it'll come up on the video.
Oh yeah, I forgot.
We're using Discord to record now. We'd have to pause and everything for me to get this.
No, don't worry about it.
There's no mystery there. Like, there's no McGraff to
Drizzt in the eye.
I'm not going to wave you off that one.
Okay.
Oh, I'm just saying what they said there, you know.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, I mean, his life did sort of wind up like being like, yeah, I mean, it does kind of track, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we know how I feel about DeGraff. Fuck him.
You hate the guy,
Fuck
yeah,
him.
for no reason.
No, this is I think, like, yeah, I can't remember. I can't even remember much about him, to be honest. Just that.
I mean, he is only in like literally like two scenes, to be fair.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I suppose you. Yeah.
Right. So, God, Miller doesn't even come in until like the last third of the episode. Just spend all of that on the ship.
Yeah,
Back
there's
on the
tunnel.
Rocinante and then the Anubis.
And also, one of the things I did notice is that on the like next time, or no, last previously on montage, we see the very first scene of the very first episode.
Yeah, this is what we were kind of like dancing around last episode, actually, was your
Is that
which ship's which thing. It was kind of like, yeah.
because that so that first ship was it the Scopuli then?
No, what we see at the very beginning, we think is the Scopuli, but it's actually the Anubis. Because that's what they're unraveling. They unravel the first scene of the very first scene of the whole show as they walk through the ship. As they walk through the Anubis, they come, you know, they see the blood on the walls, they see the burst open from the inside locker, and you know, all that stuff.
They do a bit of CSI, like she
They do,
went
in
this
fact,
way.
yeah, they do some.
The orcs captured her here.
So anyway, yeah, so Miller makes it to Eros, where
Yes.
he sort
He persuades
Oh,
the
this is something I referred to a while back because we had him dealing with a dock master on a
yeah.
previous episode and doing it socially. And then on this one, he just grabs him and slams his head against the desk, which is
Yeah,
a
he's sort of
different way.
trying, not getting there quick enough, and just decides, right, okay.
Yeah, so he's playing Candy Crush or something.
Yeah, some sort of. No, it's a
He's playing like
gambling
a
game.
fruit machine, isn't
Yeah, it's a
it?
sort of fruit machine-y thing.
Yeah. I gotta be honest, I don't know why people do fruit machines.
I got a little bit of. I so when I went to university in the first year, I was living in a seaside town that obviously had a lot of like arcades with slot machines and stuff. I got a little bit addicted for. I had a little bit of a gambling problem for that year.
Yeah, I can
Did
see
you?
it. But
How did you
I
just?
do gamble a bit as well, so.
Does it? See, I don't. I thought you played like. Sorry, I thought you played poker. Is that
I do
like?
play poker as well, yeah. But I
That
have
your is that
played.
your tipple?
Yeah, probably because it's you get more of a well you.
It's more skill based in a lot of
Yeah,
ways, isn't
there's skill in it, and also you get a game, you know, unless you're really,
it?
really bad or really, really unlucky with, you know, like you've got the best possible hand to start with in the first hand, and somebody stupidly calls you and they get lucky. You know, that happens sometimes. But unless you're really unlucky, I mean, I don't play like hands of poker, like cash poker as they call it. I play tournament poker, which is where you pay once. And you're in that tournament until you get to a prize point and win, or until you're knocked out. So it's a knockout thing. I don't play the one where you sit with a certain amount of money and you can just keep playing and keep playing, because that does lead to that's the real gambler's addiction. The addiction side of it is really that, because you see it even with the big, you know, the big money people. You see them on the TV shows and stuff, and they'll get knocked out, and if they're calm about it, they realize it was unlucky. But other sometimes they'll just keep going. You see them like rebuying into the game like three
Like
times
chasing
and
it.
everything. Yeah,
Yeah,
chasing it.
yeah. I play occasionally if I get the itch. I'll pick up you know, one of the ones that are in the distro repositories and have a go at that. But in a
Yeah,
lot of
there's
cases
a
in poker,
hold'em.
where
There's a no limit hold'em. Yeah, Texas hold'em in one of those.
yeah,
Yeah.
and quite like it, especially with the computer, because it just flies round back to you every time. You don't have to wait for anyone.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the thing about poker is it's a game of patience, not patience and cards, obviously, but it's a game of being patient and being pragmatic and taking, you know, if something happens, it's about following every single move that happens in a hand. Because otherwise, you can go, oh, that was stupid, you know. But I mean, I do. I comment if I do play poker online. I sometimes do stream it, and I'll sort of commentate on myself, you know. And it's like following. And this is the skill part. Is going, why would they do that? I mean, sometimes people are just fucking idiots. That's A. Yeah. It's gambling, and B, it's online. So you know, people are way more likely to do stupid things online than they would
be
in person.
It's the impulse, isn't it? It's just like, no, don't.
And yeah, it's also easier for people just to click, click, click. But but it, you know, the skill of it is to follow, watch each bet and or lack of bet or whatever, and work out why they would do that. And say, right, do they have, you know, because between what's on the table and what's in your hands, you have to work out if you've got the best. Or what they you think they've got. This is another thing. A lot of people, especially when they start playing poker, is they don't think about the other person's hand. They just get caught up in what they've got. And like, say you've got three kings, but there's an ace on the board. And you know, if there's an ace king on the board and you've got three kings, you think, oh, I'm golden. But they could have two aces in their hand. And that's that. You know, that'd be. I'm trying to think of. I'm making sure I'm not screwing up something there. But yeah, yeah.
See, I I'm not very good at poker, but I.
Great, we have to have a game.
I think I'm pretty sure that there's like a Discord game built into the room. We could play with it like a full.
Yeah, I think there is a poker. Yeah,
there's got to be, isn't it?
I think exactly what Hamish is saying is why I don't enjoy poker. It's because it's a game of calculation and deduction, right? Social deduction and calculation. Like, whereas I like luck based games.
No, the less luck, the better. I like a bit.
I enjoy blackjack. Yeah. I love playing blackjack.
Oh no, that's been the house definitely always wins there.
Well, but, no, of all the games where you play against the house in the casino, blackjacks you still lose on average, but it's got the highest margin compared to any other.
Yeah, you can win decently on it. Yeah.
But
at the end of the day, if you ever look at a fruit machine, for example.
Oh yeah,
they've got a payout on them, and it's like 70% average payout or something. And people think, "Oh, that's great." It means, you know, but that actually means you're going to lose 30 pence in every pound constantly. That's not, you know, people say it's got. Oh, it's like, oh, that's a payout. Yeah,
unless you get it, unless just luckily you get it at the right time, and then.
Oh yeah,
playing with them is like I'm on a winning streak. Let's keep going.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're not. Yeah. That's the opposite because of that payout thing. You see, it's almost the opposite. If people have if people are not winning a lot, I mean, I used to do that. Me and my cousin used to go into a certain pub. On a Friday afternoon, when I was at college, my cousin and me meet up. He finished work early on Friday. I had finished college early, or I had, you know, the last class or whatever. We'd go to this specific pub at lunchtime. We'd watch people feeding the machine or whatever. And then about, you know, once all the lunches had finished everything and it got quieter, we'd go and play it and win every Friday afternoon. Because I was good at the little timer, because there was like timer skill things on it that I was really good at. And also, we were both like there to observe and to get an idea.
Do you know about do you know about poker variants? Do you know about the different variants that people play, Hamish?
I'm not mostly Texas Hold'em is the one I play, but I know, there's stud and.
A few months ago, I was just bored and I went on Twitch and I ended up watching a poker tournament for some reason, and it was a different kind of poker. And I can't remember.
Omaha was it?
Omaha.
Yeah.
That looked more fun to me.
Yeah, it's a bit. There's a lot more going on. I can see why people like it.
See, the thing I like about Hold'em is that, like, when the flop comes up, when they flop it out, a lot of times, of course, like what you're supposed to do is if you don't got nothing, you get out of there, right? And I've seen people basically just through bad luck whittle away their money because they're almost too patient or too tentative or whatever, or just unlucky depending on what cards you end up getting. But I always try and count in my head like the number of better hands and see if I can sort of like match that up with how people are like betting or not trying.
Yeah, that's good. That's good strategy. Yeah, because now and again you can bluff it. You know,
I'm not very good at bluffing. Type, you know, like
online, you don't need to be worried about your personality though. You just your timing for when you click it. Try and keep your timing consistent and your bet sizing consistent. You know, if you suddenly make much bigger bits or much smaller bits, people are going
then
to be...
you scare people up.
Yeah. Yeah. But also, I think it's a good idea to vary your bit size a little bit.
Mm.
No, if you're always playing the same size bit size, then people will start to just... Yeah, anyway, let's not...
Yeah.
This could turn into a totally different podcast.
In theory, you could scare people off on the river by just, like, betting big, and then... But if it doesn't... If they don't scared off, you've just
lost a lot of money.
It's what they call getting value. Yeah, it's making the right size of bit at the right time. Oh yeah, yeah. I'm thinking more of opening bits than you know end game sort of end hand bits.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So this is mate Semi. Right, how are we going to? There's a connection here other than him being his friend, of course.
The hat.
Semi's hat. Somehow he bought
Where's
the next
the fucking hat.
Yeah.
So, now we're assuming he's referring to the same hat.
Oh.
Maybe Millet.
Oh my goodness. Maybe he's one of these people that borrows things all the time. Like some people borrow pens all the time. Miller borrows hats all the time.
Oh, that was me at school.
Like with the hat. I mean, obviously we had the metaphor of him hanging it up last time on the way out.
Yeah.
And then he says that, like, they re-metaphor it almost because because he says when I got kicked off the force, gave it to you to keep your head on or something like that.
To remind you not to make the same mistakes I did or something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah. Am I guessing they ended up making the same mistakes?
We don't really know why Semi got kicked off. My assumption is being guided by his morality rather than being guided by what the police want him to do is, I would assume, based on Miller's character.
Yeah. But,
things.
Yeah.
When he gets the kids back. And then he finds out Julie Mao staying at the Blue Falcon. Does he find out what room she's in?
When...
No, they sort of discover that together, don't they?
Why does Miller know that's Julie Mao?
I'm thinking about the registry
is Lionel Plansky, right?
Plansky, yeah.
Yeah, that's the bit I couldn't quite get out, couldn't work out, is that Miller says, look, I'm going to room 22 or whatever it is.
Yeah, it does. I'm sure there's a point where he discovers that in a different way. I can't remember what it is.
It is, yeah.
For the life of me, I can't get that back in my head.
But for me, this scene in the hotel lobby is one of the scenes that just I got very excited about. Like,
it's excellent. Yeah,
the characters you love coming together.
Go on. No, I was just going to say, there's also a bit of a, I don't know what you call it. It's not a plot hole, but there's a bit of a foul up, and I know why it happened and behind the scenes.
Oh, what's
sort of
that?
Thing. We'll get back to it when we come back to it because it's better if we get to it in place. But yeah, let's. Right.
They don't do it in the dumb way. They don't do like your main character, I'm main character. Let's all be cool. Like they kind of don't give a shit about each other. And there's a lovely bit where Miller says to Holden, like, touch me again, and there'll be another body on the floor. Holden looks at. He looks at Amos.
And Amos
like,
just goes, yeah, fair enough.
I think Holden's like going, he's going like, is this guy for real? And Amos goes, yep, seems legit.
So anyway, we open up with the hang on, I got this one.
What, I thought we were...
The Rocinante.
What happened to the other Miller? But, we're leaving that for later. Oh.
Well, Miller's just showed up at the Blue Falcon.
Yeah, joined up thinking here, I suppose. Yeah, good idea. Let's go back to the Rocinante.
And to be honest, this was the bit that did it for me.
Mm-hmm.
This is like my favourite sort of string of the episode.
Well, yeah, it's your theories that you've been following about the chef and everything all sort of change completely at this point.
My brain is a little bit scrambled from all of this, so. So they Oh man, I've just noticed, I should have noticed this earlier, that the Pure and Clean Gas Company is actually spray painted on the side. Now I know they stuck the barrels on the side and stuff like that. I didn't know they were doubling down with the actual
Pure and Clean.
Pure
and
Clean was the other one. There's the water
hole. They used to work for. It's Baratnas. Baratnas Gas now. And I think Baratnas is like brothers, like Belter for brothers.
Like
Baratna.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, so they're Pure and Clean uniforms in a.
Well, no, they're wearing
the gas company uniforms.
Wearing,
yeah. And they're all wearing them. Yeah, if you look at like Amos has got the gas logo on his left side, and he's got engineer on the right side. So it's like, you know, they've got the proper overalls.
Did they just sew patches onto their existing overalls, or did they?
I don't know if they've got new ones. Can't remember what colour they were.
So,
there was a nice little line where Amos is like, I kind of want to just blow it up or something
like
that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I love those little Amos moments.
Yeah. So
that's some sweet, sweet parking job. Oh, there you go. There's your picture of the.
This is. Oh, yeah. Elias Tefexis. There we go.
It's the start of the actual episode that's got the. The thing is, after the titles that you get,
the statue of the angel. Yeah. I assume it's Gabriel.
Yeah.
It's Gabriel,
that's what I was
right?
assuming, yeah.
Or
there you go.
Saint Christopher, painter.
Well, no, the horn.
The
I
horn
think is a Gabriel.
That, yeah, herald.
There we go.
I think it's Gabriel, right?
Yeah, I think so. LDSS Nauvoo.
I think the first time I watched it for a moment, I was like, the CGI is a bit dodgy there, but then I realized this gold statue is just reflecting the black of space back, so you're not going to get a ton of like cool reflections in it or anything.
Oh, wait, are you not? Let's...
Yeah, there's nothing to reflect.
Yeah.
You see the scaffolding occasionally, but that's about it. Everything else
that's
is just...
Cool.
Yeah, because it would look... If you're out in space... It would just look pretty much flat, and it wouldn't look shiny.
It's like you know, imagining what would a mirror look like in space? Black.
So Fred Johnson has a millisecond by millisecond breakdown of what happened on the
Doniger.
Yeah. He's got the telemetry from everything that they were recording with. So there was more to it than there was. Yeah, so that's just to say that he obviously, can I just, yeah, it says a lot of Martian soldiers gave their lives, so he still cares about the soldiers. So I don't think there was anything underhand about him wanting to look after Lopez's body, but he did also take the opportunity to grit the recording device off his suit.
I agree.
Probably for the best. Like, it's... it's the true record of what happened there. It's extra evidence to back up James Holden's story.
I'm not saying it's anything bad as such, but I'm just saying it's like on the surface it could seem like he was being disingenuous about caring about other military people, but he obviously does, and he talks about it. You know, he reinforces it here. Really, that was all I'm saying.
So it's going to be interesting to see what he does with this information next time around. Because you could use it politically or you could use it altruistically, and I don't know if the two are necessarily going to line up as neatly as you know. It doesn't seem like this kind of show where it's like, oh, just as long as everyone knows the truth, we'll all get along and we'll have a nice cup of tea. And
everybody's got some sort of agenda.
Yeah. So
what's the agenda, Brenda?
Yeah, that's it. And I see, here's the thing, depending on if the OPA want to instigate a war between the Earth and Mars, it might be in their interest to conceal that information.
I don't think the OPA do want that. We've not seen any evidence that the OPA want
and
that.
Also, and you've got to remember the OPA is not one thing still. We're still you know, this is like he's a different kettle of fish from Dawes. You know, so the OPA series and the OPA Tycho Station are, you know, might have completely different.
Broadly, what the OPA want is equal standing, and sovereignty over their territory. How they want to achieve that, they differ on, but I think they share that they want to be an equal you know.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. When they approach Eros, right at the beginning, when Miller approaches Eros and it tells you, oh, Eros station or whatever, it also says UN and MCR Protectorate. So they both have both the Earth, you know, the Earthers and all the Inners basically are the ones in charge of that. Just like it was in Ceres Station, where they've got like a governor or whatever it was.
Well, I would say from the point of view of the OPA, in terms of achieving what they want, fomenting a war between Earth and Mars probably isn't going to get them that. Like they get caught in the crossfire.
Yeah, they come off the worst for it, basically.
Yeah,
but you know. That somebody's been trying to do that, so, you know.
And they've made SD cards bigger.
Yay, finally.
It looks like a Sony memory card, that one.
It does.
But the equipment to read them, like I think I've got.
Yeah, you don't have a laser reader. What are you doing?
Oh, you've not got the laser set up yet. You're still using that. No, get your laser.
It's smaller, less room on the desk.
No, just get a bunch of laser pointers and just.
Yeah, that's all you need.
I do wonder, right? This one's got USB and USB-C, and I don't like. Is USB-C faster or something?
Yeah, a lot faster.
Yeah, it's meant to be faster.
But a lot faster.
A lot faster.
Okay. So I should plug in USB-C.
Well, depends how much data. If you've got, like, you know, 20 megs, who gives a shit?
But, okay.
And if you've got USB-C on your computer or not.
Mm. Yeah, but the USB, the USB-A connector can plug into a USB 3.1 hole, which is also faster. I think that's as fast as C, but I'm not.
Yeah, USB is not U.
I think C.
The SB makes sense, but not the U. They could have got like USB-C, the USB-C connector. You know this
little overly one. Yeah,
that is the best USB connector they've ever made because it goes both ways. You can't accidentally push it, and it's, you know.
It doesn't break like micro used to.
They jam in things because they don't go. They only go one way. Even USB-A, I mean, whoever comes up with all these different connectors obviously has the fucking things on their desk to test it all out. They never have to go down behind a computer in the dark and try. You know.
No, the number of times you have to get the USB plug and look into it to see which way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, way. Yeah. It's it's not.
Or just
actually,
try
interestingly
it.
Enough, I was told, right?
Yeah, but you can jam them in too hard and bend things, you know.
Yeah, I was told that like the side with the holes is the top. However, my B-Link, so this is like allegedly the right way up.
Yeah.
Right? So allegedly. However, the B-Link, for reasons that are quite beyond me, do it upside down.
Also, I've got different ways up with different labelling on things as well.
Yeah. All the, like, what's that? Like all the certified...
The boilerplate stuff. Yeah.
And then you've got the brand on the top. Mm-hmm. So you'd think that the boilerplate stuff would be on the bottom. That's kind of like how it feels. But when I plug it into... Well, it doesn't matter on the USB. I can plug it in either way.
Yeah, yeah.
But on USB-A, I have to plug it so that the boilerplate is facing up. So, it's, yeah. It doesn't actually cause me any issues whatsoever. But,
But it's got, you know, it's got little squares on both sides.
Oh yeah, but the one
is
blocked down with blue.
Yeah.
Yeah, the ones when the hole is up allegedly, but you know, like this. I mean, in inconsistent application, so make the best of it. But that's the thing. I can't wait until USB-C is the one thing that applies.
Well, in theory, it can. It can do display.
Yeah,
but even DisplayPort has a right way and wrong way up, which is annoying.
Yeah.
But USB-C, in theory, you can just plug a USB, you can just plug a hub in to your USB-C port and then plug your monitors into it.
Yeah, I've done that. I've done that with Steam Deck.
I've got that for the B-Link.
Cool.
And they work great. Actually, that one goes through A, but you do get them like for the Macs. For my work Mac, I had USB-C, and then that plugged into my second monitor, all that kind of stuff. Zero issue with any kind of anything. with that, really.
I don't know why we don't have wireless display yet.
We've got wireless. I hate wireless anything.
I mean, I'm just surprised we don't have it yet.
Well, I mean, I'm glad we don't, because then you just have one more thing to go wrong wirelessly. Wireless audio stuff, no.
I'd imagine the latency is probably not ideal.
It's not just that. Well, the latency doesn't help, but also the quality, you know, because people say, oh, you get interference, but wireless, you've got no control over most of the interference.
Mm.
At least if it's something wired, you can put a bit of shielding or you can move the wire somewhere else. If you've got, for whatever the build of your house is or whatever, giving you interference in a wireless thing, you're screwed. You can't.
Oh, you're not in a.
You can't change the walls or.
You don't sit in a Faraday cage. with your laser SD reader.
Laser SD reader. Yeah.
Anyway, right. So we got the breakdown from the Doniger. I don't know what. So we're waiting in the next episodes to see what he's going to do with that.
Yeah, I don't think they say any more about it.
And I like this one. Yeah. So
Kendo Nagasaki,
Adam Jensen. He's sitting in space. He's just sitting.
Kendo Jensen. Kenzo Jensen.
Yeah, he's sitting on nothing, which must be amazing.
I don't know how.
Although amazing until you're like, oh, I want to lean back a bit, and then of course you've created a bit, so then you're spinning like this, so you've got to. Yeah, it would take some getting used to, but cool.
Yeah. So, is he Earthen?
I believe he's Earthen. Yeah, he's Earthen. I don't think he's ever said explicitly, but it's he works for an Earth dude, and
Okay. Yeah. I think that's kind of cool because it gives you the idea. Because of course, one of the things that this show does kind of well is how gravity, right? Because, you think of like things in gravity according to cartoons as going,
But I think they underestimate how hard it would be to just leave something stationary in the air. That would be so fucking hard to not give it the tiniest little bit of, you know.
There's also air in, so zero gravity in air means that you can like fan stuff away, right?
Yeah. And I guess things would come to a rest eventually, wouldn't they?
Eventually, because there is some, there's air resistance, but it depends what it is.
Yeah.
If you fart in space, does that stay, does that not
dissipate? In a vacuum, it would immediately enter its, like, highest entropy state.
No, but gas, if you fart in a space station, it's just like normal because gas behaves like that. It just, gas is always trying to expand. Diffusion. Basically.
It's still in air.
The energy level of the molecules in a vacuum, and gas.
You would fill that entire space station in no time at all with your fart.
But then your bum would probably fall out of you. The insides would fall out as well if you're in a vacuum, I think.
Well,
I opened my fart hole too much.
So I guess he's playing Candy Crush or something when he's
he was wiggling his fingers to control his
What was he doing? Because he didn't have internet connection, so was he just playing a game?
He was just trying. No, he was trying to get one. He was just testing it, I think. But also it was meditation, I was going to call it. That's what it was.
Right, so this is what we see of the stealth ship from the outside. Looks kind of cool. Right, so they're talking about how only Mars have space tech.
He doesn't think, he doesn't realize at this point that there's a person they're looking for. Lionel Polanski. So that's why he says, oh, it's bullshit. Fred must have known it was out here, blah, 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 blah. He didn't know, but he didn't actually. I don't think Fred knew there was anything valuable.
No,
there.
I don't think so.
He's looking for the person, not the.
When he says only Mars builds stealth, he does go, like, because only Mars can afford to build stealth, which gives you a clue that it's got to be somebody very wealthy.
I did have a theory about this.
Oh, he's got a theory? Yes!
Oh, yay!
Oh, right, yeah.
I really need to get a Chris theory.
Yeah.
Now, I think Julie Mao might be associated with the money that comes in to fund maybe an OPA faction or another faction.
Well, we know Julie Mao's father is a very wealthy industrialist.
Yeah, so I'm seeing a link, you know,
from
a
Luna
of cash there.
I believe I thought it was Mars, but it's Luna.
It could be the case, because of course in the episode where the Doniger gets blown up, we see that the mysterious people, they're blue, and in the thematic colouring of the show,
that's
tends to be associated with Earth.
Yeah,
which and I believe Julie Mao is associated with Earth, and her father's associated with Earth.
Well, Luna, but yeah.
But well, Luna, he has. I mean, we haven't seen this yet, but he certainly has a. His house is on Earth.
Yeah, yeah, but he's got a lunar business. That's they mentioned that already in this series. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I do wonder that you've mentioned Luna a lot more than has been mentioned in the show.
I just like to remind people it's there.
Yeah.
Just because people say Earth, but it's Earth and Luna.
I wouldn't read into that too much.
Yeah, don't read too much into
it. All right, so you've been bought out by the Lunar Tourist Board.
That's it, yeah. I mean,
it's like...
in the pocket of
just
Big
because
Moon.
Big Moon.
Should we take a moment to... shout out to our sponsor, Hamish. Do you want to?
Yeah. Shout out to Big Moon.
To be honest, Lunar Tour Sport. Saying that you're in the pocket of Big Moon sounds like a euphemism for sticking something up the jacksie.
That's you know,
hiding drugs.
You might take it that way.
Yeah. Well, it's like if you're bringing some cocaine back from Colombia or whatever, it's like I'm in the pocket of Big Moon. If you know. if you're thinking if it's follow the money, which you know is generally a good starting point for a lot of.
But also, quick. I was going to be really super pretentious, but I've forgotten the fucking Latin. Qui bono? Who benefits?
Mm. Oh right. Oh yeah. Okay.
That's nice.
I thought that was to quoco. Is that that's
it's something bono? It's quoco bono.
Quoco bono.
Qui bono.
Yeah.
Qui bono.
Cui bono.
It could be a corporate interest thing rather than a political interest thing, and that's
the same thing.
Well, look at our governments.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, our government is owned by, all the politicians are owned. Not all of them. 99% of them are owned by huge corporations.
Well, they're owned. Our government's owned by Big Moon. In the pocket. In the pocket of Big Moon.
So it could be the case that maybe war benefits certain corporations. It could be the case that an Earth corporation is developing stealth tech maybe at a fraction of the price. They've managed to undercut them on price development, and maybe this kind of stealth tech basically is like the next level of weapons of mass destruction. You know, like if every military has stealth tech, that basically means everyone's a target at any given point.
Well, you got to remember, again, I'm just stating it as we know it up, in this episode. On the stealth ship, they find what they interpret as a bioweapon.
Yes. All right, should we go straight to that?
That's worth factoring into what you're talking about, I think.
Yes, yeah. Okay, let's go straight to the Reaper tech.
You just went past it there. There we go. You're near there. That's it. Round about there.
Anubis, Egyptian god of the dead.
Yeah.
So, some foreshadowing there. Why would you name a ship Egyptian god of the dead? Also,
I mean, it is an attack ship.
Oh, okay. There we go. But also, Adam Jensen has a crack in his visor. And
no. Like, would you... Oh, yeah. That's from when. That's from when Amos.
That's from when Amos pushed him into the hull.
Could they
looks
not?
Like, it looks like they've repaired it with some like araldite or something, or some resin.
Oh, okay. All right. That's good. All right. Because I was a bit worried for him at the moment. So, They're doing so. Oh, they find a safe in the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
That is one of my notes. That is like, what's in the safe? They bring it back with them. By the looks of it,
yeah. Well, I don't think this is much of a spoiler to say. In the safe, it's the last marathon bar.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming it's their black box.
No, it's a safe. But they bring the computer core back as well.
Oh, right, okay.
They mention it in the dialogue. They cut the safe out, and they cut out the computer core and bring them both. Yeah, there you go. Cut out the computer cores. It's time to leave. There you go.
So they come across.
Yeah, so and I like that Alex says, I wouldn't have let you back without decontamination anyway. Don't worry.
Yeah,
I do. There's a bit on the ship when they discover the gunk on the engine core, because Holden and Naomi have sort of approached it on little tethers, and we have the lowest speed chase I think I've ever seen. But I love it. It's like they're going like this. We need to get away.
The tentacly
thing. But do they need to get away? Like I don't entirely like. Obviously, we don't like. What the hell is that? Is presumably.
Well, when you first see, so we've seen this before in the opening of the first episode.
Yeah, everybody forget. Even Chris's theories completely forgot about it. That's quite.
On the first episode, we see Julie Mao on this ship. She goes into the reactor room and she sees what looks like a human figure made out of the goop or
twined into it or something.
Embedded in the goop. But she sees a human figure going. Ah! Yeah.
Okay, so is this like? I mean, that looks very goopy.
It does look goopy.
I mean, and it's moving. Oh yeah, it is.
Yeah,
moving.
It's moving. Yeah, that's why they run away slowly.
and they deduce that it's getting its energy from the engine core.
So, is it a living thing?
We don't know.
I mean, you might. I mean,
they interpret it as behaving like a living thing.
Yeah,
I think they say that outright.
Yeah,
they say
that. Yeah, it seems it's alive. Something like that.
Yeah. So this, I mean, the logical next step is to think this is the thing that they worked out on Phoebe Station.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Well, he did just say. Literally, the dialogue just then mentions Phoebe Station, which is Phoebe.
Yeah.
That's it, right? No, further back. There you go.
Lopez says they found everyone dead. Yeah, everyone on Phoebe dead. Some toxic spill or something. So this is, I don't know what. So how this ties in with the stealth tech is kind of like a big. So Phoebe Station is Martian. So this could be Martian stealth tech.
Think of it as Martian. Perhaps think of it as Martian in the same sense that Ceres is an Earth station, Eros is a joint Earth, and not being an Earth, being nominally under Martian control doesn't necessarily mean that Mars has much control over it or dictates what happens there. Or
it could be a Mars corporation, something to that effect. It's kind of interesting. Like, were they really quick to assume that it was a weapon? Like,
yeah, to be fair, yeah. But I mean, it's on a stealth ship. Nobody knows the alliance of. I think in that context, you're going to think weapon. Also, it looks like it's fucking killed everybody.
Yeah,
yeah. Is it possibly? It's not an alien, is it?
We don't know. I don't know what alien is. Really, I mean,
doesn't look like Naomi. It hasn't got the big bobbly head.
Because the thing is, it rings a little bit like the beginning of the Mass Effect games, where they come across the ancient alien technology. But I'm going to assume that this is not alien based. I don't think it's aliens. I don't think we're supposed to think it's aliens, right? We're supposed to think that this is
blue goop.
Blue goop. Yeah.
For now, it's blue goop. Yeah.
Nanotech or something. I don't know.
Mm. They say that, don't they? They say like a nano composite leak that's to do with the stealth technology or something like that.
Yeah, they've got that sort of conjecture going on. Yeah.
So I'm guessing like they weren't touched or attacked by any of it.
Not as far as we saw.
I don't know if this is in any way deliberate, but when the Rocinante was flying away, like the angles look very like very much like old Star Wars, like pre, like obviously better than better looking than the original.
I can see that.
Had the same kind of angles. That kind of, and the reason they of course did it in Star Wars is because they had to work with the effects that were available at the time. The models and sometimes like.
It's fair to say that they sometimes do little homage to other things in the show.
Oh, loads of homages on.
There is not going to say what it is remotely, or but in the next couple of episodes, there is a straight up direct Star Wars reference that is unmistakable. That I think you might enjoy.
It's not.
It's not as on the nose as that, is it?
I literally was at an old boss's wedding a long time ago, and he hired some local musicians to, you know, keep the soundtrack going, which I thought was really nice. You know, it's a little bit nicer than.
Did they play the Cantina song?
They played the Cantina song. No one worked it out. It's a good little ditty.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What
did you say? No one what?
No one recognized it.
No one, because they were like a woodwind trio, I think it was. So they were playing various, like a lot of the music they were playing. People wouldn't know. Well,
people under 35 probably don't have the cultural memory of Star Wars.
I suppose it's the one episode that's you know the
like millennials love the prequels. They fucking love the prequels. Whereas you know to Hamish me there.
I think you might be
especially the first one.
I think you're thinking a little bit younger millennials, because I remember I was 12
when it came out. Yeah.
And I remember...
I don't think of you as a millennial, for what it's worth. You've got Gen X-y energy.
See, I disagree. I'm smack dab in the middle of millennial. Oh, and I feel like a millennial.
Maybe, but culturally, I think you're a bit more, you know, older-y.
It's a compliment, Chris. You look like you were.
Yeah, no, it is.
I appreciate it, but like, I don't. I think. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's definitely overlap with older millennials and younger Gen Z. And I think that there's much more of a difference between younger Gen X and older Gen X. Like, I think younger Gen X people and older millennials are more similar than younger and older Gen Xers, if that makes sense. I think there's I think there's more. During the Gen X generation, there was a lot more that caused a rift between there than...
I can see that. In the Star Wars universe, the Cantina song, do you know what that genre of music is called in-universe?
Space Jizz.
Jizz.
I don't know why I put...
you put space, you have to put space over everything.
Space Jizz.
Spacers.
So maybe we should refer to the Boo Gunk as Spacers.
So obviously that's the, I don't know. I was going to say MacGuffin, but I'm going to guess it's a little bit more than just that.
I mean, I think a MacGuffin MacGuffin doesn't necessarily mean it's meaningless, does it?
No, not really. No, it doesn't have like to. It's just the sort of thing that makes everything work together.
That's how I think. Like a MacGuffin isn't necessarily a cheap thing.
It doesn't have to be valueless thing.
The Ark in Raiders of the Lost Ark is a MacGuffin, but it's also cool.
Yeah, and then they just put it in the shelf at the end.
I do love that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they come back to that later.
Yeah, and ruin it.
Is there a fifth one now? Is the fifth mystery or something?
I do have a confession. The fridge bit in the
fourth one.
I enjoy that bit. I don't like the movie, but
I watched it again and I found that a bit less objectionable when you think about it in the context of Indiana Jones.
Yeah, it's silly, but it's not.
The fifth one's actually not bad.
It's bad, but it's not as bad.
It's not as bad as the fourth one. It's nowhere near like the caliber.
See, I don't like the third one. Again, millennials fucking love the third one. The third one to me, it's fucking slapstick fucking nonsense. It's him as a fucking idiot. Like, and also it does that thing in the opening 10 minutes. You learn how Indiana Jones got his whip.
Oh God,
got
yeah,
his hat,
yeah, yeah,
got his
I know,
car,
I know.
I don't give a fuck. That's not what makes a character.
It's like, have you seen Solo?
Yeah,
Star Wars. Yeah, yeah. It's like, fuck off.
Yeah, you're always on your
heist.
Own.
It's a good heist movie.
We should call you Solo.
Yeah,
no, it is. Yeah,
it makes
a
no
great
sense.
Heist movie.
Great heist movie, but everything else about it is just.
It would have been 100% better had it just not been a Star Wars film.
Or if it had just been Star Wars with new characters, didn't have to be connected.
Yeah. But I mean, again, I don't like flashbacks. They kind of
I don't inherently mind flashbacks, but yeah, that third Indiana Jones, everybody likes it a lot more. It's just stupid comedy all the way through. It's nothing like the first one. The second one to me is better than the third one by a long margin.
The second one is just
he pulled the dude's heart out.
The second one's got a lot of silly comedy as well, actually, I think.
It does, but not as much as
and
the third one.
You've got
nothing.
A kid in it as well, which is...
The third one is nothing but stupid slapstick comedy and accidental heroism, which is the thing that Lucas gets into with the prequels as well.
Yeah, yeah. I'm interested to know why they decided immediately there and then to nuke the ship.
Well, because there's something horrible on it.
Well, that bothers me because we literally just learned that this thing feeds on radiation. Like, how sure are you?
Yeah, that would be my worry about it. And they do, you do sort of see the explosion and everything. It's like they sort of stare at it and you think,
"Yeah,
is there something
like
else
this,
going
this
on?"
This thing feeds on radiation. Let's give it a super dose of fucking radiation.
But will it tear it apart?
Was it actually a nuke that they sent?
See it go off. Oh. Yeah.
And it's okay. But they all agreed to it. They were like, all.
Yeah, without any thought or question. Yeah, that is a bit weird to me.
Yeah. So Adam Jensen, it seems a little bit like the voice of reason in all of this. It's like, look, you've got a bargaining chip. It's more evidence that will probably support some sort of.
Yeah,
truth. You know,
what's happening there is they're all emotional. It's an emotional response because that's
It's like shit. Look at that. Yeah. What happened? Yeah. And we just got away from that. Let's. Yeah.
I mean, it's literally the ship that killed all their friends.
Yeah, that's I think that's part of it as well. Mm. Is specifically that's the one that did the job. They think,
and that's why Adam Jensen is the voice of reason, because it's like he's not emotionally connected to the.
Yeah, it's probably a more powerful ship than the one they've got now. Like, if it could be salvaged, you know, you've got a little fleet.
Well, yeah, you've got an amazing ship then, but obviously that stuff is in it, and how do they get rid of it? You know, they don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
And it could be infectious, and
it seems to
have killed the crew. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of...
I mean, it could be anything. It could be a bioweapon. It could be something like, it could be a fungus that eats radiation, which I'm sure would be helpful in space.
Yeah, that might,
You know, it could,
I mean, not a mycologist, but that makes sense to me.
Yeah, it could be an alien. I don't know. There's so many things that it could be that nuking it initially doesn't seem great. At the same time, as well, is that it's unlikely to be the only existence of that thing in the solar system, right? So that means that if there is stealth...
I mean, if it's the same thing that leaked on Phoebe, then
there's
probably
then
something.
It's already in two places.
I know. And also, if it is some kind of stealth tech, nano, whatever. Whoever has that technology presumably has more
of
it.
Yeah, because remember they had multiple ships. They had six ships attacking the Donovan.
Yeah. So
what I'm not sure of actually, I don't know. Maybe Drew knows this. Was that the same sort of size and what have you as the stealth as the ships that attacked the Donovan?
I wondered the same thing actually. Because
scale's difficult to tell in space, isn't it?
I'd always thought that the stealth ships that come after them, all the stealth ships that we've seen at this point, I thought they were all like frigates, like the Rocinante. But somebody in this episode, when they go onto it, refers to it as a fighter, and it does look a bit smaller. It does look like a smaller ship than a frigate sized ship. So yeah, I'm not actually clear on that.
Mm.
But then you see them walking around it, and you see that that's quite a big fighter ship.
It looks a lot smaller than the Rossi, I think.
No, I thought the Rossi was bigger. So I thought it was the other way around, so I thought the Rossi was smaller.
Really? Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, I don't know.
No, I'm getting my head mixed up because also he sends that probe out as well, doesn't he?
Yeah.
But then again, of course, just because something is smaller doesn't automatically make it less fightery.
Oh, right? No. Yeah.
Think of like we see what those we've got those big boats with the runway on,
mm-hmm.
and then you've got the planes that fly off it, right?
So
are you talking about an aircraft carrier?
That's the big ship,
big boats with a runway on.
Ship with the runway on.
Ship with the runway on. Yeah, I mean, you know, if we were German, they would call it ship and runway and
airport boat.
We have to ask one of our German friends to that.
But yeah, I mean, even more like a cruise missile, particularly a hypersonic cruise missile, can take out an aircraft carrier. And a cruise missile, like, you know, this not that big, obviously, but
a couple of meters. Drones
now can take out destroyers and stuff.
Yeah, but like a super high tech fighter might necessarily. It could be as big as a runway boat and I guess size, you know, in space doesn't.
It's more of a semantic thing rather than a physical thing. You know, there's no.
Yeah.
You know that each navy or whatever might have their own lines where you've also, crossed a line. You know,
level of technology, you know, an Apache attack helicopter versus a World War One battleship, you know, like tech level is going to matter as well.
Yeah,
absolutely. So, and I mean, it's obviously cutting edge. So,
yeah.
Well, yeah, it seems now, to be the cutting edge, as we can tell, because they're talking about expensive and so rare.
Yeah, like it could be a Mars Corp. It's for Phoebe Station. We haven't seen Phoebe Station. Do we even know if it's military or civilian?
Don't know anything about it.
Not really.
Okay, so it could be a Mars.
They talk about it a few times, and obviously people know there's something there. There is a station there because.
Actually, yeah. No, in fact, way back, yeah, when they're being questioned by the Martians, when they say to Holden, you know, stop it, go to Eros, go to the asteroids, get the ice, and then he says, stop at Phoebe. I think Holden says Phoebe's off limits, like it's a secret research. So presumably it's secret in universe what is happening there.
Okay, yeah. So, well, now I guess now we know. Maybe, I don't know.
Well, we've got some information for sure.
Or we've got some circumstantial information. You know, like it could.
Yeah, because so, it's only their deduction that makes us believe that that substance is what killed the people on Phoebe, but it seems like a solid deduction.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like too much of a stretch. So, unless there's a bait and switch, so they end up nuking it.
Hang on, Hamish is Hamish.
No,
Hamish.
I'm just looking at, but there's too much interspersed spoiler to sort of be because they're talking about. Best if I don't say anything, I think. Other than what we've said is fine, yeah. I was hoping that we'd have a reference from what Holden says.
So the meeting in the Blue Falcon, Chris, how excited did you get about that?
That was an
emotional, you know, moment for me.
That was pretty cool. Yeah, I did like that. I like the crossover kind of stuff. I got to be honest, I'm kind of warming up to Adam Jensen. Although...
even though it says he's a character name on the screen all the time, you're not going to use it.
No,
Nagasaki. Go on, Chris.
Right, well hang on. I want to get... Let me finish this quick thing before you start that one, because this is a really... You've got to take this scene apart, really. I'm just very quickly going to check something... Blah, 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 blah. Holden's questions, blah, blah, blah. Nah, there's no specific detail. Ignore that for now, then. Let's carry on.
But I did, while he was looking up, Chris, I saw Hamish doing this. I think he might be a spy, so.
Yeah, the Blue Falcon. It's brilliantly built up. It's the way that
I love this.
It's the way that everybody, you know, some characters are just like duh, like Alex is just like duh, you know, looking at the attractive woman. Amos is like, eyeing everybody up, sizing everyone up. Yeah, before this,
Amos recognizes that those people who came in are people who intend to do violence.
Yeah, he recognizes operatives when he sees them. Yeah.
Handle themselves.
Right, this. Now, this is the bit that there's a screw up in, but it's not scripted as a screw up. So, although people say that, right, this here. Alex is not meant to be poking his head up and stuff. Because people say that wasn't a bulletproof couch, and people moan about the bulletproof couch. But the point is that Wes... No, not Wes. That was Wes Chams Amos. Kamal... Oh, that's Alex Kamal's character name. Oh, for feck's sake. The guy who plays Alex... He's supposed to be a coward. He's supposed to be just a cowardly pilot and just keep out the way. And he's meant to be lying flat on the ground, which is why the bullets aren't hitting him. But he does a thing where he pokes his head up and tries to be like gangster shooting over the top. And it's like they just couldn't get him to bloody stop it. And so, when they tried to edit it afterwards, they didn't really have what they intended it to be, which was him hiding flat behind the couch. So, yeah, that's...
The only thing I don't like about this scene is the gun muzzle flashes added in post don't look great. Like, I'd love it if they... I assume that's like all the gun flashes in the game movie.
Yeah, in movie.
I assume they're all post. But they don't look great in this scene. And that
I just laugh at the number of bullet holes going through the desk.
I find it interesting that he recognised James Holden like pretty quickly.
Well, James Holden's face was spray painted everywhere. In huge.
Yeah. And presumably also been
and
on
the
TV
video and the TV
on the news,
all sorts of
things. But I don't know. Do you pick those? I mean, I'm nitpicking a little bit here. But
what would be an equivalent? Like, who's somebody who's been on the news a lot?
I have on occasion ran into well known people, but because I see them in real life, I don't.
Yeah,
I've done that. Yeah, I know what you're saying. I've been in Glasgow particularly.
When I lived in Liverpool at uni, I was in a, what do you call it, a line at the till.
A queue.
Thank you. Next to...
You're British and you don't know a queue.
I talk to Americans too much. And standing next to me was somebody who played a character in, or was an actor who played a character in Brookside.
All right.
Yeah, which is probably about on the same level for me. I didn't watch Brookside. We caught it occasionally. Probably on the same level as... And I said, are you in Brookside? And we had a little conversation. Mm-hmm. It was nice. But, that's probably about on the same level of...
I saw Mature in Specsavers one Christmas.
Oh, really?
In Bath.
See, I think the last person I was in close proximity to was... So, you know Peep Show?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You know
love
the
David
guy.
Mitchell. I'm not just keen on the other one, but David Mitchell.
You know the guy with the tube up his nose. Jeff, is it?
Oh yeah. I think it's Jeff.
Like me and a friend were having a coffee in sort of like the same sort of restaurant cafe as that guy who was filming for another show like down the road because there's a lot of filming around these parts. Never occurred to me that it like because they're not super famous, they're just like seen them as secondary, but
I've got a terrible memory for names, but I've got a decent memory for faces, so I think I would, I might not remember what they were from, but I would tweak they're from something, you know, they are
But then when you're walking through a restaurant, I don't clock everyone's face. It's a bit rude to stare at everyone.
Just getting it back into context, I would say the thing, the difference is with Miller's entire life has been messed up by this guy for the past month.
That's true.
Apart from the Julie Mao stuff, everything else that's happened on series happened because of James Miller. James Miller's the face attached to what happened, like the Canterbury and everything.
Sorry, you mean James Holden?
James Holden, yeah. Oh no, I got the name wrong. Chris corrected me.
Spoiler! Now Chris knows they're gonna have a baby.
I am your father. Yeah.
I mean, how many grandparents does that make then?
But no, I love. So Miller says to, he goes, James Holden, Shit just follows you around, kid.
That's shit just follows you around, don't it, kid?
Very Millery.
So now he's lost the hat. We have to have extra cues to remind us that he's film noir.
I think that's true, but I think he's. I think while he was a cop and while he was, you know, a cosplaying Earther, I think he was restrained in some way, and now he's something else. And partly he's more free. He can be more, you know, aggressive and weird, and but also he's got to figure out who he is now. And I think that's part of that is like he's working out.
So working out his own personality, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, just as a thing. Do you want me to avoid the Julie Mao bit where they're going? Because it's kind of graphic on PeerTube. Should we give a fair content warning?
That's not...
Oh! No, that's fine.
That's all right, yeah. Fine. I mean, it's...
Just the last...
Cool, cool.
It's a show, so it's not really...
it's not that you're going to demonetize yourself or anything, is it?
No.
What content would you give out of interest?
Sorry?
What content warning would you give?
I don't know, like, because there's like mild gore or.
Yeah.
Like, it's.
I wasn't sure if you were going to go for the nudity thing because she's.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it's like.
But it's not. It's not graphic. It's not like.
I don't know. Like, it's. The level of nudity. Is pretty usual. The level of gore is pretty usual, but you combine the two, like
I think it's I think you're being a bit, if I may say it again, American about it. It's not sensational or anything. It's not gratuitous. Have we lost your voice there, Drew?
I have, and that's because I muted myself.
All right. Okay.
I just call Chris a puritanical piece of shit. Oh, right,
okay. I mean, well, that's okay.
Well, that's
far be it from me to question. Far be it from me to question the moderation policies of the video. thepolarbear.co.uk.
No, I wouldn't.
Yeah, no. It's
if it was a whole, if the whole show was like, if it was like Game of Thrones scenes with people running about naked and shagging each other and stuff, maybe I'd put a bit of a content warning on
it. To me, like sex-based nudity is a lot less of an impact than violence-based.
No, I'm saying, I think some people are,
they're sort of combined in Game of Thrones.
Mental health level,
also
this still right now, I don't remember being in the show.
It's quite the backstory. You should write some fan fiction about him or something.
Do you want to go back a bit and find out how Miller knows what Dora is?
I don't think it's necessarily in this scene. I can't remember. I think you're right that happens, but I cannot for the life of me remember.
So there he is. Lionel Plumpy. That's it. He's got the information from Semi.
That's Lionel Plumpy.
Yeah.
He doesn't.
It's got the room number, though.
He's looking for Julie Mao, not Lionel Plumpy.
No, he's looking for Lionel Plumpy.
Is he? When did he find out about Lionel Plumpy?
Well, he gets told that's who the contact was by Dawes.
Dawes doesn't tell him
that that's Julie.
Okay. Yeah, okay, got ya.
Oh, sorry, that's a bit of a spoiler. Dawes knows that who's using the Lionel Polanski name at the moment.
I mean,
you know that already, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, that's a little bit of detective work on the fly there, isn't it? Miller in action.
Yep. So there you go, that's how he knows what room it is, and that's why he's heading for that room. And here's the little, don't touch me again. Who are you? What are you doing here?
He's very confident, considering he's never been to Eros before.
Miller.
Yeah, he's got that Miller, sort of cop thing, though, isn't it? It's that arrogance of a cop type. Yeah.
I mean, he is like, I love Miller. Like, I feel like you could hang out with Miller and have a nice time, but he's a bit of a dick.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's just a bit of a dick if he doesn't like you. Like he's probably a bit insufferable if you don't.
Like I'd gladly have him as my boyfriend, but you're gonna have some trouble.
Shuddering. I like that. Shuddering Alex is shuddering.
Yeah, but then you could say that about Amos as well. Like, he's probably, like, you know.
Guy. More going on with Amos and blah, blah, blah.
Okay, even more. Okay.
Oh, God, yeah.
So they go in.
Naomi works out that, so everything's smashed in the room, and it's Naomi that works out that, like,
it's all electrical stuff that's been switched off. Yeah,
it's all been switched off intentionally.
I love that Amos knows every single smell in the room as well.
blood, sweat, cum, and ozone.
Scopuli. Okay,
so we've got scopuli uniforms. So usually when you find uniforms in a hotel room, it usually means someone's doing some sort of heist or crime.
Or has a mistress there?
Who worked on the scopuli? I don't think they're dressed up in, seaman crew uniforms. But like,
you don't know the king.
Well, it's like...
No, I meant somebody working on the scopuli. That's where their mistress, and they're coming to visit the mistress.
Right. It's like, I've always wanted to be with someone who's been on the scopuli in deep space. Naomi works out that they're turning it off, turn everything off. So presumably something happens in that room to do with that bioweapon.
She's, she's got something in her.
And yeah, like, so that's patient zero of the blue substance.
And Miller's reaction here is very, he goes from, I'm a tough cop, I'm a badass, everybody out of my way, to, Julie, I love her. Like, now he's vulnerable, completely vulnerable. All the walls are dropped.
That's quite a gory.
It's the mouth part, isn't it? It's the thing of it growing out of her mouth. Yeah. That's the worst part.
It has a bit of the feeling of, The Shining, the film.
Mm. Yeah.
The lady in the bathtub who's like.
It's all scabby and rotten.
Got a bit of that to it.
This sort of indicates that the blue stuff might be a bioweapon then.
Looks that way.
I mean, done something to her.
It's done something to her, yeah.
That doesn't. I'm guessing she's dead.
Oh, I don't know. If crystal healing is true, then she might be all right. She's got a crystal in her mouth.
She might be extra powerful or something.
Yeah.
Her chakras are perfectly aligned. She might be dead.
Yeah.
But her chakras are perfectly aligned.
Yeah.
That's sort of where we left with it. I remember I was talking, I think it was in the last episode, where it's like, I'm just assuming that we'll find Julie Mao alive.
Isn't there some more talk?
Yeah. That's another thing we were trying to keep a straight space for.
And that's the... shuddering. There's shuddering going on. Look at that.
I didn't see any shuddering there.
I didn't see, no.
It's a very subtle acting,
isn't it?
And of course, they're all shining torches at this thing that they've learned feeds off,
energy,
electromagnetic radiation.
Yeah. Oh, no, there is shuddering. There is shuddering.
Is there a shudder? Oh, fair enough.
There's a shuddering. Sorry, Matt. So that's, yeah. So, I got to be honest, like, I'm just left with more questions than answers at this point.
For me, this is the hardest episode to stop at. And
want to move on and find out more.
And it's not like it's a huge cliffhanger as such. It's just like, what the fuck is going on there? Like, I need to know more about this.
Yeah, well, there's multiple cliffhangers. Yeah, that's a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
The last thing the Lina Polansky name showed up on the nets was here.
Hmm.
Yeah. So,
it's all Lina Polansky before we find Juliet. Everything's about Lina Polansky.
Yeah, for the Rossi crew.
For both of them, because Dawes sends him after Lina Polansky. He sends Miller after Lina Polansky.
But he knows that's Julie Mao, right?
No, I don't think so. Oh, Dawes might. Dawes might, but I don't think Miller does.
Miller, why would Miller give a shit about?
Because that's the last person that would know anything.
Okay, I see.
That was the last contact with the scopuli was Lina Polansky.
Got you.
So he thinks he's going to find this Lina Polansky. Oh,
he only realizes that Julie Mao is Lina Polansky when he sees that video that Semi gives him.
What video?
That's when he's when they're at the little noodle bar, and Semi's like, "Oh, I checked the cameras. You know, I was just bullshitting. Yeah, here's what the camera saw." And he sees Julie Mao.
Does he? I can't remember that bit.
Yeah, yeah.
That's much later than this.
Yeah.
I knew you wouldn't take no for an answer.
So he knows this is the person that piloted the shuttle from the...
Ah, so he does it. This is the point when he finds out. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So he does know that she's using the name Lena Polansky in this episode then. But he still came all the way... He still came all the way there without knowing that.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, you're right. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, you and I have watched this, like 5-6 times through? Like, can't quite keep track of everything.
Also, one thing about Miller that kind of, like, I was...
Point, the thing they're talking about there, that there's an Earth warship heading towards Tygo Station as well.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Another little point to bear in mind.
2 days.
They're decelerating towards them right now.
So yeah, and they work out that it's the Doniger battle. It might be the case that the UN actually get a hold of this information then, and that might actually help stop a war, the Cold War getting.
Well, it's all sold out to Fred at this point. He's the one with the information.
Well, unless the UN get there and take it forcefully, if they're sending a battleship there.
So am I right in thinking that this series one is one book, and then there's another book that's series two?
Sort of. They're not entirely analogous, but the overall arc is pretty much each book, and the final episode of each series is the name of the book that it comes from. So this is called the first book's called Leviathan Wakes, and episode 10 is called Leviathan Wakes.
And yet we never see a wake with a Leviathan.
Well, no, it's presumably the Leviathan Wakes is the blue stuff that's waking up.
Who knows? You've got two episodes. Well, you've got the next double episode, as we're going to treat it, to find out, haven't you?
Or is it the belt waking up politically into its, you know?
Could be all sorts of things.
Is there, like, I mean, I'm assuming that, like, because I think you said that each each series has its own arc, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, more or less.
So we're expecting some things to evolve.
Each series has its own arc within a broader arc.
There's nothing. Nobody's story. There's not like a suddenly this set of people are finished their story.
So at the end. At the end of the first series, you will have some resolution, but not a complete resolution.
Yeah, I mean, people's lives still go on and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Totally. But
you're going to get a resolution of we're getting the answers to what's happened here. We're getting the answers to what we've just found out at the end of this episode, to some extent, I suppose. Mm. Okay.
But there may be more questions.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it might be the case that there's some finuffling and finagling, and it might be the case that the UN get a hold of Fred Johnson's thing through maybe some deals.
Fred Johnson, yep.
Fred Flintstone, yeah. And, and then they go, oh, well, it turns out it's Secret Faction X that are behind all this, and we'll save that for season two, but well done, everyone. Let's go home and have some lemonade.
Because I'm really fucking looking forward to getting to the next two episodes, but as far as we can tell, depending on where you saw it, you may like not episodes 9 and 10 may have been presented as one episode, or they may have been two discrete episodes. I've always watched it as one episode. I think Hamish, you've always seen it as two, but we're going to watch 9 and 10 as one episode.
Yeah, we're going to do 9 and 10 together. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
So maybe
anybody was keeping track and watching at the same pace.
Indeed. The next episode will be both 9 and 10 from series one.
And I can't fucking wait.
It's going to be great.
See,
can't wait for Chris to find out all the bits and pieces that he's been asking. Yeah.
See, like, I think this is my favourite episode of the series so far, but...
Really?
I also feel like it's the one I've got the least to say about, because I'm just, like, there with, like, okay...
Yeah, we didn't say an awful lot. To be honest, time-wise, we've kind of got through it quite quickly, and that's including a couple of our usual tangents. But I think it's because...
It's a build-up episode.
There's a lot of build-up, and there's a big action scene in it as well, which doesn't really have a lot of... You know, it's the action scene itself is beautifully done, and, you know, the little build-up before and everything. It's all great, but there's not much else to say about it than what we did. it's a shootout, and Miller comes in at the last second.
I just had a thought. So, am I right in thinking that Julie Mao is the person from the beginning of the very first episode?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, that's where we see...
With the hair physics.
Yeah, with... Is it now... Is she inside that very... Inside
that's what
that
I'm saying, yeah. She's in the Anubis.
Yeah.
Because remember, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. They're yeah. So we think it's the Scopuli as viewers, right up until we discover that. So when they go into the Anubis, that's what I'm saying. About when they go into the Anubis, there's the blood on the walls. There's
the callback stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, the stuff, the big the cabinet that's been burst open from the inside, or cabin or whatever from the inside. That's literally what we saw in the very first scene of the very first show.
She takes the Anubis 1A.
Yeah, she takes the shuttle
back to Ceres, because presumably Eros. That's like the nearest
Eros.
And then she's found dead in the hotel room there. So presumably she has been infected by this bioweapon.
That's what it looks like.
Is that that's a reasonable assumption.
And then exactly what you would take from what we've seen. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that might mean then that now the next question is: did the crew getting the rub on the way in that save them? Did that make the difference?
We don't know.
We don't know that.
Yeah, and also they're in close proximity to whatever the fuck is in Julie Mao right now. Like they're right
they're
next to
it. Yeah, they're all standing in. You know, half of them are standing.
They don't
inside
even have
the
suits on
room.
Or nothing.
No.
Yeah. Because the suits might have protected them when they were in the Anubis, but mm-hmm. Miller's also but not Adam Jensen. He managed to get away. Fair play. Saw his opportunity. He took his shot.
Legged it. He did look very. I loved how nervous he looked. Like
the whole time he was just like. Yeah. Well, he also calls he also calls the thugs in.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's. I mean, I don't know if I assume you put this together, but that tac team that they send in that Jensen. Specifically call like they're waiting, and Jensen specifically calls them in and says, "This is the place. Do it." That's the tech team that Erin Wright, the second in command of the UN, that's the one that he sent to kill.
Once they get connected
back to Kenzo, Kenzo gets passed the information that there's a hit team, there's a tac team there, and. You know, he guides them to Holden.
Ah, okay, yeah.
So that's second in command of the UN trying to assassinate Holden.
Yeah,
because I did notice...
I did mention his name in chat because of
Erin Wright.
Erin Wright. Yeah, I thought it was Erin Wright, but it's Erin Wright.
Yeah. First time through, I thought his name was Erin Wright.
Oh right, I just thought it was Erin Wright, like E A R N R I. T-E or...
I thought that was first name, surname.
No, he's got a weird first name. I can't remember what it is.
It's like Samovar or Salivar or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Gunfire.
Is that what woman there who's like presumably posing as a sex worker? Is she part of the strike team?
Yeah.
They're all straight. There's four of them.
There's a couple of women who go to the vending machine at the start who I think are unrelated.
Yeah.
There's a lovely bit there as well. There's a bit where if you can back up to when they enter the lobby... I want Naomi looking at the picture of a sunset.
Yeah.
And it's just a lovely bit of, like, again, they don't hammer it home. It's just a little expression. And, you know, she's looking at that sunset. She's a person who's never seen a sunset in her fucking life.
Ah.
And she's going, is that what it really, you know, is that what it, is it really like that? You know, like, there's that kind of look on her face. And I think that's just a lovely little unspoken little bit.
See? Breathless gas engineering.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. So yeah, these are the, see, because they are, well, they're obviously disguised, but yeah, they're disguised. See, I wasn't expecting them in disguise because they're thinking, look, the spy is Adam Jensen. The crack team that are going to come in and
well, Holden. Aaron Wright says that Holden's just going to, because Avasarala says you're going to make a martyr out of him, and Aaron Wright says no, he's just going to die in random street violence. Yeah. They just want it to look.
Yeah, they would have just taken, because this is a really dangerous place to be, yeah. Eros. So I mean, they were just going to take him and dump him in a corridor somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like...
We'll just leave him in the lobby of the hotel.
Even the Black Ops worked on me. It worked on me. I thought he was going to die in random street violence. So that's, yeah, okay. Good disguise is fair play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they put the effort in.
But I will say, I've said it a couple times, but like, yeah, this moment, this scene where Miller meets up with the Rossi crew, like when I'm rewatching this and it's like, oh, it's that scene. Like I pause it, I go and get a cup of tea and a snack, and like I savor that scene because I adore it. It makes me cry. Like it's like all the people I love are meeting up, and I think Hamish feels similarly.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, because Miller and Holden get together, it's the big.
It didn't seem to hit Chris like that, and that's interesting. I don't say that in any kind of critic. Like, it's just interesting.
Did you feel like that the first time when you watched it?
Yeah, because it was everything coming together, and it was the people that you.
I did feel like that when I was watching it. I didn't think I feel, you know. I don't know if it's as heightened now that you folks have seen it about five times, but like,
oh no,
because I wasn't anticipating it. I wasn't. Well, there was a moment.
That's like, fair, yeah, maybe it's something that I've built up on subsequent watches.
I mean, I thought I kind of go, oh, this is the bit where they intersect. Yeah, I was definitely like, you know, sort of.
The two stories are joining together at last.
Yeah, this is the bit.
That's it, actually. Yeah, the two main threads of narrative in the first season have now come together, ready for the last episode.
Yeah, because we knew that they were probably going to meet up when they were both heading to
Eros. Yeah, yeah.
Like, it was foreshadowed pretty...
Hamish. I think I'm identifying you with Amos for some reason. Yeah, you did do a bit of misdirection last time. We were talking like, no, it's just an asteroid. They're not going to Eros, really.
Yeah, they end up in Eros eventually. At that point, that was all they were doing was going to that asteroid. The Eros thing was definitely a cover, but that's where they go from there, from the asteroid. Yeah.
But I figured that we'd see them on Eros at some point, even if they were just there to like pick up.
Well, it's the nearest place to stop as well, isn't it?
Yeah, we need a piss.
Need a space piss. And I'm not going to do it. Jensen did it, and it's floating everywhere. You know?
Sucked his dick off. not like a bloke.
I see. I. Do you know what? I would kind of like it if we. Okay, this is just a bit.
Oh God, weird, where's this
like, sort of fantasy kind of thing, right? Of like, if it was more like if like living. You know how people on Instagram and other places live on like they convert a van into a little living space and then they just travel about, which, you know, seems really lovely and seems really cool, but I kind of love it in a world where that was like almost normal, where like where like, you know, in like where you got spaceships, you know, where basically you live aboard a spaceship. It's like a house.
Well, that's how I view Elite. When you're playing Elite, that's kind of the way.
I've always thought, cause if we do ever get to, you know, a Star Trek space communism, like post scarcity technology level or whatever, yeah, I think most people would, well, maybe not most, but like that would be a normal way of living, right? Well, I've got literally nothing, no responsibilities. I've got all of my needs are catered to, so why not just go out and, you know, journey? Yeah.
Yeah. And also, actually, you asked me in one of the Deus Ex videos what my favorite underground base was. Was it?
Did
you even record this?
I think we did. Yeah, I think
okay.
so.
Favorite secret base.
Where would I have
like best location for a secret base? Chris picked a ship, which is interesting.
You picked the ship.
But I think ship. Yeah, yeah. Because you could like you can move it. That's the cool thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think maybe I might change my answer to a train.
That's what, have you seen Snowpiercer?
No.
Oh,
that's
right,
kind of it's not particularly good. It's got some interesting ideas in it, but it's all right.
Good ideas
but it's, It's a post-apocalyptic
thing. There was
another
TV show as well.
They live on a train that has to keep constantly moving, and so their train is their whole society, really. It's kind of cool. Yeah.
Mm. We've had, like, in the final Hitman game, the newest one, 3 of the World of Assassination, there's a secret base on a train there, but it's more military-ish rather than, like, you know, living type of thing.
This has got everything there, but the Snowpiercer one. Is...
Yeah.
Including a class system.
Class conflict,
There's the train from Land's End to John O'Groats, and that's an overnight train that's like quite nice, apparently.
I've always wanted to go on a sleeper train, like a long, like Siberia or something.
The Orient Express or whatever.
Yeah.
Before the age of aircrafts and helicopters and all sorts of things, of course, it used to be more normal for like important people, like kings, queens, presidents of the states, to travel by train.
Well, don't our monarchs still have a royal train that they travel on?
There is not only is there a royal train, there is a royal train track.
They've got their own train track.
They've got whole like they've got their own section of the underground. Yeah, I don't know if they're still using it.
I mean, I don't want to, you know, just speculatively. You could quite easily. No, I'm not even gonna.
So it's funny. Actually, it's funny. Just on the subject of like trains, I don't know if you can see over my shoulder, but I've got the role playing game books up there. One of them is Call of Cthulhu. Now, Call of Cthulhu is based on the Lovecraftian stuff, but the Lovecraftian stuff is kind of timeless, you know, because they're alien gods that have always existed. Mm. So the actual settings for the adventures can be anything. From like the middle, you know, they've done it all time. They've done prehistoric, Middle Ages. They've got modern ones. Now, to my mind, though, the best of it is probably at the most the sort of, if you like, the default, the standard is like the 1920s, 1930s.
Yeah,
it's where the standard is, and I think the reason that works so well is it's a good balance of technology, accessibility to the world. That keeps it as an adventure, you know, because if you say, right, I've got to get from, you know, to Turkey or something, you just get a flight to Turkey, you know, whereas back in that time, you know, a normal person couldn't just get a plane.
Well, it's like espionage or film noir type.
Yeah,
like
they've all got an era that works to get
if
the balance.
If you set them now, like you've got mobile phones, you've got such easy access to communication.
Well, that's
and
it.
Information,
you've got the internet as well. So the whole point of a lot of the point of Call of Cthulhu games is the research and discovering things and looking into stuff, you know. But you just know that if the Cthulhu thing Mythos was a real thing, it would be completely and utterly wikified. I mean, it is in our universe. It is, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I like if you're doing Call of Cthulhu, I like it to be like the 1920s sort of thing because it's you've got a wee bit more technology to make your characters feel a bit more, you know, you've got guns and stuff, but really that's not much help against a Cthulhuan monster, you know. But it's a sort of, you know, you've got that sort of, you feel like you're slightly technological. Then you've got you've still got long-range transport, like trains and zeppelins or whatever. You know, got that kind of thing. But it's not super fast, so it's room for adventure on the way and stuff as well. In fact, there's an entire campaign book, in fact, maybe two books, on the Orient Express, which is brilliant. Horror on the Orient Express or something similar to that effect. And it's, you know, it's such a good, you know, you're travelling right across Europe and everything. It's interesting. And I think that's what makes... Getting back to why The Expanse is good is that they don't overdo the science in the science fiction.
No.
It is very realistic. So you still got time delays. You still got realistic times to get from, well, like the ship, you know, the Earth ships coming to Tycho Station, and they're saying, right, they're almost on us. They're in a hurry. They're nearly here, and it's like, oh. When are they going to be here? Like 2 days. You know, it's like...
Star Trek appears
out of nowhere suddenly, you know.
Yeah.
Or Star Wars.
More broadly, the way they gather information and solve mysteries and deal with problems is all very... There's never, like, a sonic screwdriver. You know, like, they have to... with their ingenuity and their skills and their, you know, whatever communication they have to.
Yeah, it's realistic. Yeah, things, even though they've been given access to the Martian ship, realistically, certain things are still off limits to them, like the command locker. Yeah. You know, it's just give them access to the systems.
Which makes the characters more rounded because the characters all have their little bits. Like if you need violence doing, Amos is your man. You know, if you need somebody to sort of coordinate and lead, it's Holden and Naomi with obviously the engineering-y stuff and
Alex the pilot. That's it. You know, it just makes a lot more stuff makes sense, even though some of it is not scientifically super accurate. Yeah. It makes sense without being fantastical.
It feels grounded and weighty.
Yeah. There's no space magic.
No,
because in Mass Effect you've got like the Mass Effect relays, which is a completely unexplained technology.
which I don't know what that is.
It is explained by the end, isn't it? But in a stupid, kind of a stupid way.
I mean, it doesn't explain how it works. It just explains
how it works. No.
No, it's aliens and magic and
hand waving.
Yeah, I mean it's very much same thing with like nanotech and Deus Ex in a lot of cases.
The implants and everything are a bit hand wavy.
I mean, like, how the hell does your eye drone just like regenerate in like a minute?
where's it coming from?
It's nanotech.
Yeah,
taken and coming out. You're like, ooh. It's like some of your bones losing some density and this stuff.
Does it come out of your eye?
Yeah, I assumed it comes out of your eye.
That's disgusting. Never do it again.
I think in Invisible War, I think it just immaterializes in front of you.
Right, that's better.
And it's like it's more like a hologram thing.
Are we finished with The Expanse?
Yeah, I think so.
We're going to start tangenting again. okay, right, well, thank you very much, and yes, finale next, 9 and 10 together, so anybody that's watching and keeping up with us, watch both parts, both 9 and 10, together before you watch the next episode if you haven't already seen them.
Or else.
Bye-bye.